Chapter 6. After the War Years. The war was winding down. Germany had surrendered. A proud German people had blindly followed a madman until he went over the brink. And now he was gone, and sanity crept back on the European continent. The Japanese were still hanging on, but the end was in sight, and soon the gods of war would flee, leaving a devastated Far East. With these new developments, there no longer was a need for the basic research we were doing, so our group was disbanded. Before our group broke up, one of the PhD engineers asked me to stay in Washington and join him in a 50% ownership in a consulting firm. I said, "No, I do not want to live in Washington." Another engineer asked me to join with him in some secret government work in Boulder, Colorado. I said, "No, I do not want to live in Boulder, Colorado." Where the others went, I do not know. It had to be in secret research somewhere. Ordinary industry had no place for that talent. As for me, I went back to my old boss and the Arrowhead Network, and back into my old office in the WEBC building. Now, the plans of the war years began to take place, handicapped by lack of materials, of course. Factories were now converting over to peacetime production, leaving the wartime machine production behind. I built WISC AM and WISC FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Here, I met Arthur Findorf of Findorf Construction, who were building our three towers and building. He complained bitterly, saying he could hire all kinds of PhDs, Madison being a university town, but he could not find any bricklayers or carpenters. Later, WISC became a TV station, but I had already left the network then. Then, WEAU in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, became a TV station too, but I was leaving the network then, and my old brilliant friend and engineer, Todd Jorgensen, put that one together. WEBC ended their negotiations with the city of Superior, and the transmitter plant was moved to a location south of the city and far from the airport. But I had left the organization by then. I had laid down the basic plans, but someone else carried on. In the years 1946 to 1954, I was carrying on for the Arrowhead Network, but I was doing more. I was building radio stations for friends of mine, moonlighting, you might say. This I did evenings and weekends. Wife June says of those days, I was almost a widow. Those years I hardly ever saw the guy. She rarely saw me at home. I was directly involved in building and putting on the air stations in St. Cloud, Minnesota, Alexandria, Minnesota, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, and in filing briefs to the FCC for many other stations, some of which were built and some were not. It was a grind, but this had always been a way of life for me, and I had never known anything different. In 1954, I was 45 years old, had been with the Arrowhead Network 28 years, and the pace was getting to me. I lost weight, was very nervous, couldn't sleep nights. At a younger age, one can handle it, but at 45, things add up, and you're forced to pause. Something else was going on, too. June and I were active in the Glen Avon Presbyterian Church, where I was a deacon, and it gradually came to us that we should seek ways to be a force for good in some community, to use my talents in that manner. So, I went to the library and took down the census publications looking for towns of 5,000 and over in Minnesota and Wisconsin, which did not then have a radio station. For each such town, I noted the number of stores, the total retail sales and the sales per store, the nearness of other towns, and whatever. From that, I made a list of the most feasible towns in which to put a radio station. At the top of the list was Pipestone, Minnesota, not too far away, and we did not want to live in a purely farming community, so we passed that one up. Since then, a very successful station has come in there. Next on the list was Redwood Falls, Minnesota, and I filed an application with the FCC for that city. Months later, Harry Linder, who owned a station at Wilmar, Minnesota, filed for the same facilities. So we were in a hearing, which would take a couple years to unravel. So I withdrew my application and went down my list to the next town, Ely, Minnesota. I drove to Ely and was so delighted with the town, I filed an application there. The FCC granted it June 16, 1954. Now, I had a license to build a radio station. I was in Washington when the FCC granted my license. That was on a Wednesday, and the following Sunday I was still in Washington, and I went to the National Presbyterian Church, where the subject of the sermon was the story of Samson, who had great power when he was with God, but who lost his power when he broke away. Here was a message for me. I took the church bulletin home with me and framed it, and hung it on the wall with my station license in Ely as a reminder. Visitors to the station must have thought it odd to see these two documents side by side, but no one said anything. Then June and I and family moved to Ely, where I built just another radio station, this one for me, and where we could be a force for good in the community. But first I went over to see my boss and explained everything to him. Looking at my wasted frame, he agreed that I should do this. He had had one-third of his stomach removed due to ulcers brought on by tension, so he understood. He drove himself as hard as he drove the rest of us. I went up to Ely and put on weight, which I still have, and found I could sleep like a log every night. I had started a new life.